Hi, is this Cricket Call? This is Nicholas Sherman from I-75. I heard an oblong wing Katie did, FC field cricket, and a JBC jumping bush cricket. I've heard all three of those. My address is the intersection of Doan and Barlow. Okay, thank you. Bye.
A friend of mine emailed the sort of call for cricketers to me at work, and I thought, you know, there's information or questions about getting maps involved. So I emailed Sam about getting involved with doing some map making, and by exchanging emails and talking about blogs, I ended up as the Buffington Expedition blogger mapper.
This is Buffington Expedition checking in from the Trinity Cathedral. Coordinates are north 40.
Sam has, over the years, come up with a number of innovative ideas to not only measure biodiversity, but to bring citizens and science together. And he posted on Facebook about 3 weeks ago this aural bioblitz of doing a biodiversity survey of the orthopteroid singing insects of New York City and its vicinities.
Next point of contact should be Battery Park area.
When people start calling germs bugs, then I get pissed off. The gloves come off at that point. My name is Matthew Buffington. I'm a research entomologist with the United States Department of Agriculture. We have a laboratory called the Systematic Entomology Lab, where we study the biodiversity of insects in North America that are associated and important to United States agriculture and homeland security, trying to prevent invasive species from coming into the United States. And my training is in the order Hymenoptera, which are the ants, bees, and wasps. My particular interests are in parasitic wasps that actually attack the larval stages of other insects, laying eggs either in them or on them, and eating them from the inside out.
Do like normal call-ins.
Okay.
And
I'll text you after each one.
Okay.
Just to let you know I got it.
Perfect.
Okay, that works. Okay.
And then we'll figure something out later.
So
tonight.
I borrowed a bike from NIF, and I'm going to be taking it on the subway to certain points, and then at those points riding it around to locations and doing my aural survey.
I'm just doing the Buffington Expedition map. So I'm going to be making a Google Earth KML, which people can download onto a Google Earth program. KML is called keyhole markup language, which is the sort of the text that Google Earth files are made out of. It's like a scripting language. And there's also going to be a hosted version that will be updating on the blog itself. So I'm going to be adding points in as Matt calls in. Then there'll be a final product with all his points. And then we're going to try to get his bike tracks up there as well at the end. So then there'll be a final product and there'll be an in-process product. I'm Nif Minnick. My job is doing mapping and geographic analysis for a commercial real estate company.
We sent out emails to listservs, to groups of people that we knew or we had as contacts in our own contact list. We set up Facebook groups, and then, I guess like a virus, it spread. They started mentioning it to other people. We developed a nice website that quickly climbed up on the Google counter. So when people started typing in cricket, they would end up getting to our site. We got very little press initially, but most of the core group and the project leaders all happened just through word of mouth. And Sam Droege, I'm with the U.S. Geological Survey at Patuxent Wildlife Research Center. People who are involved, like the Discover Life Group and Emily Sweet from the Appalachian Mountain Club and Tammy Pittman from the Proteus Gowanus Art Gallery, are all acquaintances or friends or even related to us. I think one of the interesting things, the new model here, is that we're doing a survey of crickets and katydids, but we're doing it in a bit of a Wikipedia kind of way, where we just say, yes, we want to survey these animals. Here's some basic framework. And then a whole group of original strangers now develops that, and it shapeshifts into something new. We're testing out that idea. What we want to see, hopefully, is that this is a way of working for very little money that can be replicated in other parts of the world, different cities, different groups. And we have purposely not copyrighted anything or said, yes, we're going to be the only organizers of cricket crawls elsewhere. We really want people to steal that idea and modify it to fit whatever their local needs are and whatever their purposes might be.
This is Eric from the Gowanus Expeditioners. Our group has launched. We're all floating in Canadian canoes at 7:30 p.m.
Well, we're
Saturday
focused on New York because we're here at the American Museum of Natural History, right in the heart of Manhattan. And we feel it's really important for, especially for us at the museum, to know a little bit more about where our own backyard. We have Central Park right across the street. There's amazing natural habitats left in the city. But it's also really important for people who live in the city to realize that nature is everywhere, that it's not just in faraway exotic localities, that right in their own little backyard or in their front patio or on their fire escape, there's animals, there's plants, there's life all around them. And that really getting to know what you live with and appreciating the nature around you is really, really important. For my program here, we also focus a lot on invertebrates and conserving invertebrates, all those smaller insects and other relatives that don't have a backbone. People really study birds. They know a lot about birds, and they love mammals, the soft, fuzzy things. But we really don't know a lot about invertebrates, and there's plenty of new discoveries that we can make here in the city as well. I'm Liz Johnson, and I'm the manager of the Metropolitan Biodiversity Program here at the Center for Biodiversity at the Museum of Natural History. It's the first time that we're actually surveying for something, an insect, that actually makes a sound. So there's plenty of surveys that listen to bird calls, or plenty of surveys that we have organized for frogs that make sound, but it's the first time that anything's been organized to actually go after an insect.
Eric Schering, 840. We're hearing a field cricket right at the Gowanus Canal.
Each species, each different kind of cricket and katydid makes a unique song, has a unique sound, so that you can survey for them just by listening for the different sound that the different kinds make. Many of them are really challenging to tell apart, and so for the purposes of this survey, we're picking seven species, five katydids and two crickets, where their songs are very distinct, so that a citizen, anybody who's not necessarily used to doing this kind of thing, would be able to study these ahead of time, listen to them from listening to the songs on our website, and they would be able to go out at night and pretty comfortably be able to say, oh yeah, that's that's a field cricket, or that's the jumping bush cricket, or something like that. I guess we might expect that any areas of the city where there's an existing natural area or a city park that has a nice chunk of woods, some trees, or some nice grassy fields, that we would probably expect a little bit higher numbers or higher diversity of species there than if you were in sort of the heart of Times Square or some other more developed areas. But part of getting all these people out and having them listen everywhere is to help us get a sense of whether that's really true or not. We have an expectation, but we don't really know if that's going to play out by the end of the night. So that'll be fun to see.
So one product will be the website, and all the maps and all the data will be up there. We'll probably publish a paper about the project that'll be scientific. You know, we'll evaluate how well observers detected species, what the scientific value from a hard science perspective was of these data points, where were the biases, what was the variance, what are our error rates. And then the Proteus Gowanus Gallery Group, they're going to be putting on an exhibit over the next few months that will combine the presentation of results that will be like where katydid maps, and then different artists' interpretations of crickets and katydids as themselves, irrespective of the cricket crawl processor count. Just we want them to look at this group of animals and do their own interpretation, to do their own kinds of studies from their perspectives, rather than just say, well, the only way we can study these animals is strictly through science, strictly through a counting numbers thing. We're trying to blend things a lot more here because we feel that it's a continuum of information, and that different groups have different ways of looking at this, and they're all very valid.
I think we're answering phones, but I don't really know exactly what we're doing yet. I'm doing something, though.
No, I don't know. But I did learn the cricket noises before I came. I know all seven, so I can count them if I wanted to.
There's a data form on the website. And on that data form, there's a phone number, and when the folks are out and about, if they actually hear some different katydids or crickets, they can call us up at that number. And what they'll be doing is leaving a message at the phone number. And in that message, they would give us the following information. They'd say who they were, where they're actually standing. They would list the names of the crickets and katydids that they're listening to, and they would tell us the time of the evening. And that information will be recorded, and then we here at Cricket headquarters will be able to access that information, and then through some computer work, convert it into a map and a database that will be uploaded onto our Cricket website for anybody to have access to. Some of the songs are going to be challenging to tell apart, but I think we'll have enough volunteers out there sending in the information so that we're not too concerned with every single type being exactly identified. And the beauty of it is that when we're finished, we will have a map with the locations and the identifications of all that was heard there. And the map is so detailed that we could actually go out after the fact. If anything seemed questionable or funny, we could actually send people out, experts out later on, in another week or another couple of days, to go to certain places and actually confirm whether something was there or not.
Another cricket hearing on the other side of the canal. It's the same kind. And we thought we heard one that went the little clicking one, but we only heard it once. Is in the same spot. It's in this sort of right across from the...
They make noise because they're trying to find a mate. Their calls are signatures of what species they are, and also there are some people that have hypothesized that their call is also a function of their fitness, as their ability to be, how good of a mate they are. That a strong hind femur, which is what's required to make the sound, is correlated to actually how healthy the insect is, and that a male that can make a good call is a good mate. They make the call by actually rubbing part of their hind femur against the leading edge of their wing, and it makes this kind of resonant frequency, and they can adjust that, they can change the pitch, they can change the frequency, and they often do that based on temperature. Well, they're probably not choosing to do it. It's basically they're ectotherms, so they're only responding to the environment. If you're a calling insect and you're making noise, you're also going to be attracting things that you probably don't want to attract. What interests me are the actual parasitoids. These are animals that actually use the cricket body as a host for their own reproduction. And there's a number of flies in a family called the tachinid flies that's exactly what they do, is they specialize on finding crickets in the environment. They actually have a special organ for listening specifically for certain frequencies, and will attack the crickets while they're calling. And if a cricket's attacked, they're done for. They're moribund, as we call it. And there's a number of hunting wasps that, according to some people, they don't actually respond to the frequencies. It's not really sure what they're responding to, because they seem to attack males and females equally. They're cluing in on something, most likely either rummaging around in the ground or something like that. Needless to say, it's a tough business being a cricket. And you see them in your house and you freak out or whatever, but when they're out in the natural environment, they're chased down by all kinds of things. And they're just trying to find a mate and get on with it. And that sound recognition is the way they do it. And there's others that have suggested they do something similar to cicadas, where they produce so much sound, like they'll get in these giant populations and produce this enormous amount of sound. And the sound is, it spreads so evenly over the environment, so loud, that if a predator or a parasitoid came into the environment, they wouldn't know where to go.
Crickets and katydids, unlike other insects, are making all this noise. All these different parasites have figured out, if this kind of thing is calling, go there, and there's your baby, and they'll nail them. It does totally strange things. It will jump on a cricket. It'll count up 23 antennal segments, and then he snips off the rest of the antenna. They go up, and they count up the other side, exactly 23. It snips it off. So basically, somehow dumbs down the cricket into a zombie cricket. Then the wasp will go out in front of the cricket and lays down some kind of chemical path that the zombie cricket just follows, and then it takes it to a place the wasp wants it to end up, like a hole in the ground, basin or something. And then it stings it and lays an egg, and its larva then grows inside the paralyzed but alive cricket, and life happens again. An interesting thing is the differences culturally in how people have appreciated crickets and katydids over time. So, for example, in a lot of the many different Asian countries, the crickets and katydids are brought in as songsters. There's music that's surrounding them. Poetry features them. They're eaten as food. Children, are just delighted to have and to play with crickets. Whereas in North America, no one even knows that the crickets and katydids exist. You talk to them about it, and those sounds are confused with many different things, and most people don't even identify it as an insect. And if you show them a cricket or a katydid, they all pull back in fright. Kids are scared of crickets and katydids. And the reality is there's no real difference between the kinds of crickets and katydids and that they are doing anything or they bite or they sting. It's just this big cultural difference between how people have developed their tastes and the appreciation of the music of crickets and katydids.
I have a master's degree in entomology, but I'm the deputy director for the Urban Park Rangers for the Department of Parks. So I get the crickets at the pet store. I feed them like cornmeal or potatoes or apples for a couple of days. And then I put them in the freezer to kill them. Then I roast them up so they're nice and crunchy, and I put them in the chocolate chip cookie dough. Then bake them like cookies. It's a novelty item. Something like this comes up, or I hand them out to kids during some of our programs and stuff. It's a big hit, especially if they get a sticker. They'll eat just about anything if you give them a sticker.
I ate a cricket cookie. So I can say I ate a cricket. You can't really taste it.
Do you want a cookie for the road?
What?
Do you want another cookie?
Cookie for the
road?
No, I love them actually, but I'm trying to stick to my diet. So.
You can't eat too many because they make
not
you
on
jump.
I think over New York at least, there's probably 50 some species. So we might hear some of the, if you went online and looked at the page, there are a few of the tree crickets, but they're usually cricket that actually has a formula attached. You're supposed to count the number of chirps in like 13 to 15 seconds, and in the formula you add some numbers or subtract some numbers, and it tells you degrees Fahrenheit or centigrade. And I think there's also another formula for field crickets, but it's temperature dependent on a lot of their singing, of course. Right. The hotter they are, the faster they'll chirp. Like yesterday was actually cooler, so tonight's about 10 degrees warmer, I think. And moisture is pretty good. They usually like moisture conditions.
Do crickets like the rain?
That's what the website says. They don't mind the rain.
Oh, really?
It's the wind and the cold temperature.
Oh, really?
We're just going to go in, get away probably from a lot of traffic noises, and maybe go on one of the pathways a bit. And just listen. Actually, you have to stop and listen and see what you hear. Some of the lower shrubbery would have certain crickets there too, and some of the higher trees then would have some of the katydids. And they might be a bit lower too, you never know. And if any happen to be flying, you might even have them hit the tree and you can watch them and they'll crawl up, possibly go higher. Oh, I am Lou Sorkin, entomologist at the American Museum of Natural History. I don't actually study them. It's just an entomology endeavor, and I like doing this kind of thing. We're in near the lake in Central Park, close to 77th Street. In the background, of course, you hear a lot of the crickets and katydids sometimes. Some of the field crickets you'll hear here.
They're there. Once you stop and look, they'll show up. See this cricket here?
Head downward, long antennae?
I think so.
That's one of the, I think, of
a bush cricket.
Picture of it.
Oh yeah, they're not all that big. They make a
lot
of noise.
No,
cicadas robust. Yeah, sure.
Here's one and two. See, this is a female up here. Has an ovipositor.
And this is probably the male here. It's been chirping.
The light doesn't seem to bother him at all.
Now it's gonna make a sound. Watch. See, the wings are up.
Katydids are related to grasshoppers, but they're actually, from a species perspective, they're in a very different group, totally different family. They look a little bit alike, and grasshopper, more green, and that in all cases, the katydid is so disguised that it has veins like a leaf, it looks like a leaf, so they're actually very hard to find because they're so hidden in the foliage. We're real interested in crickets and katydids because they're very low down on the food chain. So they're feeding directly on plants, they're feeding directly on the detritus in the forest floor. Those are more the crickets. The katydids are up on the trees and those kinds of things. And we don't have that kind of information for how that group of animals is doing. Are they increasing? Are they decreasing? What's their status? Right now, there's no crisis. We don't think that crickets and katydids are in trouble or are changing. But in a global climate change kind of world, and knowing what we found with other groups, at some point they probably are going to change a lot. And this is the kind of very basic information about where they are, how common, where do they occur, where don't they occur, that we can then, in a number of years, if there are changes, we can go back and say, well, knowing what we know from 2009 or 2010 when it's repeated elsewhere, we can do comparisons and talk about change. We really want numbers, so this allows us to quantify, to develop a baseline for surveys.
BioBlitzes are important because they tell us about what's going on in the environment. If you don't have a baseline concept of what is there, then when it's gone, you may not even know it ever existed in the first place. To me, that's absolutely alarming. I like the idea that there are other species out there, and they're doing part of the natural world that we are so divorced from. At the same time, if they were gone, we would be in a world of hurt and not even know it. I'm often asked, mosquitoes, tell me, what's up with mosquitoes? What would happen if we got rid of all the mosquitoes? What good are mosquitoes? And I always interpret that, what you mean, what good are mosquitoes to humans? They're not very good. In fact, they're a pest. We don't like them. They spread disease, etc. But if you took every mosquito on the planet and just suddenly made them disappear, we would have a crash of so many ecosystems almost instantaneously, it'd make your head spin. If you eat fish, if you eat anything out of the water, the bottom of the food chain, more often than not, are larval mosquitoes. And as soon as you take them away, there goes everything else. In my opinion, it's too big of a risk. It's not worth messing with that kind of thing. So BioBlitzes tell us in a snapshot what is here right now. And that, to me, is it's worth doing it just for that, just the pure exploration.
Okay, this is the Buffington Expedition checking in. I'm in Washington Square Park. I decided to ride directly from Madison Square Park south because Fifth Avenue has got a great bike lane. Let's see, the katydids are non-existent here as far as I can tell. I can hear jumping ground cricket and fall field cricket, and that's it. I'm a little disappointed. I thought I'd find a katydid here. There is a lot
the
more
common true katydid is probably only going to be found in certain high quality forests, but something like the greater angelwing could be in almost any shade tree, and something like the field cricket could be found in patches of dirt or cracks in the sidewalk. And we really don't know until we go out and do the survey what we're going to find. Another one is the jumping bush cricket, which seems to, at least in the places that we're familiar with in the south, which is more the center of its range, are associated with any shrub. So any kind of planting could have a jumping bush cricket in it. This is the kind of thing that we don't know about New York City. We'll learn a lot about, and we'll have it mapped by the end of the night.
I'm headed now further south on Fifth Avenue. Or in that direction, towards Times Square. That'll be my next check-in point.
In general, there are fewer species in highly urbanized areas just because the conditions are a little bit more challenging. But there's still the ones that are here are still very important to the environment and to the ecology of the area and to the lives of the people who share the city with them. So there's a lot of things that would affect an insect in a city environment. A lot of it would just be their habitat, whether they have the proper habitat or not. So if you're a common tree katydid, you're going to want to have a nice overstory canopy, lots of nice big trees, and it's harder and harder to find extensive woodlands in a city environment, so that if you don't have the right trees, then you won't have the insects. For an insect that lives in the soil, or any of the invertebrates that live in the soil, we have soil that gets trampled because there's a lot of people walking around, so it's not loose. The parks are very highly manicured, so there's not a lot of leaves on the ground for them to hide in or overwinter in, so that makes it a little bit more stressful. There's a lot more pollutants in a city environment, so that again is going to have an effect on the different insects that might be here. We have nights almost all night long. There's really very little darkness in a city, and so there's many insects that would be nocturnal that might be affected. Their behaviors might be affected by the presence of lights all at night. The whole hydrology of city areas is a little shifted off too. So if you have aquatic insects that might depend upon a certain water quality or certain flow in a river, any changes to that in an urban setting is going to be a challenge. There's a big list. It's hard to be an insect.
This is Isidore, who gets the booby prize for sitting in the most uncomfortable position in the middle of the canoe of all. So here he is.
Never mind my sore back. There's a Betty Boop cartoon when she leaves the city to go to the country because she thinks it'll be a lot quieter there. And when she gets to the country, you know, all of these crickets drive her crazy. And one scene is these katydids. And what you hear is, katydid, 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 katydid. And they get built and built and built. And it sounds like the katydid that we heard on the samples. Well, we heard, we didn't hear da 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 da. We heard da 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 da. That's a katydid with a Brooklyn accent.
In many urban areas, you have something called a heat island, or the temperatures are a little bit higher in the city than they are in the surrounding areas. So in that actually may be beneficial for some insects. It allows them to sort of extend their life cycle and live a little later in the fall before you get a killing frost and maybe survive over the winter where in other places they might not. Actually, I don't know offhand if there's something that lives just in the city and not in an outside. One I can think of is one that we actually discovered a couple years ago, which is actually a centipede. And we found it's a new species in a new genus, and it was found in Central Park, and it's never been seen anywhere else in the world. So that's a unique story. But what we're thinking is that it's really an introduced species and something that would be native more to East Asia. But we're still excited, the fact that right here in the heart of Manhattan, that a brand new genus even was discovered.
Right across from our museum.
About 100 years ago, a man named William Davis published an article about the fact that northern, or actually common true katydids, had disappeared from Staten Island. He had lots of people working with him, and they couldn't find that species at all. It's very loud, very easy to identify. So I was pretty sure that it had disappeared, and there was a lot of evidence that it had either completely disappeared or largely disappeared also from Manhattan. Prior to that, when the explorers came through, or it was mostly farms, the species was known to occur there, and if you go into the mountains right now, you'll hear these common true katydids everywhere. So it's a species that isn't in trouble globally. It certainly is common outside, but it's very mysterious that it completely disappeared from these two islands, even though there were trees left. So one of the reasons we want to do the survey to see how far back into the city, if at all, this species occurred. During the count, we found that the species now does exist in a number of places on Staten Island. And we've located a Staten Island naturalist who said that they had been absent until fairly recently. He had records of them for the last several years, and it was something that they had remarked upon, that they had not heard them until very recently. And then the information about Manhattan was completely lacking, as was the other boroughs, as to where they are and where they're not. So it's pretty interesting. It'll be something we follow up on this year and then next year in terms of trying to really document where the common true katydids.
Well, this is Moskowitz. For our last stop, we are at, it is 8:46. We are at Dallenbach's Park. It is on Dunham's Corner Road in East Brunswick, about a quarter
right
of
now,
a mile
right now, we're estimating we covered probably somewhere around 300 to 330 different localities or sites during the night, and we probably had somewhere between 300 and 350 people involved. Most of the data that was collected came in from the boroughs, so Staten Island, Manhattan, Queens, Bronx, Brooklyn. But we had a fair amount coming in from New Jersey and north of town in New York. We're actually still allowing people to do collections if they want to. However, for most folks, the event itself was the primary reason they went out to count katydids. Just being able to go out and knowing that everyone was counting crickets and katydids at the same time was very appealing. That's one of the things we've learned, I think, from the process and thinking about it. I'd say 95% at least percent of the data came in that night, which is super different from most of the traditional kinds of survey techniques, which would take weeks for all the data to come in. You have to wait for everyone. You'd have to goad them by sending emails or letters, where are your data, those kinds of things. Here, everyone just sent it in because it's so easy. That's another big lesson for us, that doing something like that is very attractive to people. It means you get a higher response rate and a higher, I guess, compliance rate, if you want to call it that. A number of people felt unsure because they were afraid that they were actually duplicating someone else's work, which turns out it was to some extent, but surprisingly, relatively few people went to the same place, so we really didn't run into that problem. We just had these clumped distributions near where people were living who were participating. But again, would they have been willing to go across town to count crickets and katydids and something outside of their neighborhood? A bunch of them probably wouldn't have. I think for a lot, it was a big adventure. You know, they go out at night, it's dark, they're not used to that. People didn't go out and not find anything. They were able to find crickets and katydids, you know, right in their backyard or right in the front street.
So this is Tammy, and I'm calling in a final blog for the evening. All my other blogs went to the wrong drop.io address. I tried. But anyway, we had an amazing evening. It was beautiful and surreal and dark and stinky and post-industrial and a little spooky. And Judith and Eric called in a lot of crickets. And Ruben saw some stuff that he needs to report on. So here's Ruben Cope.
Hello. Just as we launched, Anne and I saw a raccoon across from where we launched. And later on, saw some rats, one white rat, one small rat, both going in the opposite direction. They didn't even notice each other. And we heard a lot of crickets. Not sure whether it was the oblong or angle wing.
Also, there were lots of fish in the Gowanus Canal. What? And things, yeah, little fish skittering over the water.
And they were crickets.
And they were crickets. There was the swimming oblong angle wing, scuba diving crickets. So, and Judith is now going to sing El Grillo by Josquin Dupré. We're not going to give you her last name because she's famous, but she doesn't really want to be known for what she's about to do.
El Grillo, Kepa, El Grillo canta para beber el vino. I can't remember it.
Make it up, don't know it.
El Grillo is Italian for cricket.
El Grillo.
All right. So, goodbye.